There's a new show debuting on Showtime this Sunday night called Billions. It stars Paul Giamatti as a U.S. attorney and Damian Lewis as a hedge fund manager, and they clash, and it is a lot of intrigue, a lot of behind-the-scenes bargaining, and a very, very well-written and very, very tense drama. I've had a chance to take a look at the first six episodes of this series that is going to debut on Sunday night. And, well, let me just show you a little clip from Billions. This is a scene with Giamatti and Lewis. They meet up, and you can feel the tension between them. But the acting quality here is so high, it just grabs your attention. This is from Billions.
You sending me messages? Because I'm here.
Well, kids in my office really thought you might buy that house. I told them, you got big balls, but not that big.
They're right. I'll probably pass. It's so nice, though, you know. Feels like you're part of the beach and ocean. And all that air out there, you know about it. Your daddy's got a little place out there. He must let you use a bedroom some weekends if you say please.
Walk away.
I should. But then again, what's the point of having fuck you money if you never say fuck you?
Oh, man. The writing comes courtesy of my next guest, Brian Koppelman. He and his partner, David Levine, have worked on scripts like Rounders and Solitary Man and Ocean's 13 and The Girlfriend Experience and Runaway Jury. And together with Andrew Ross Sorkin of CNBC and The New York Times, they are the people behind the show, Billions. Brian Koppelman, welcome to the Big 550 KTRS.
Well, it's just a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
Nice to have you here. I like this show very much, and I've seen the six episodes, and I want to see more. So I hope it's a big success for you. But I smiled a few days ago, having watched those six episodes, when I saw a story about the SEC going after a hedge fund titan named Stephen A. Cohen, and told him he can't manage his client money again for a couple of years and has to spend 2 years running his own $12 billion on Wall Street. And I thought, wait a second, that's right out of your plot.
Well, that's funny. We did a lot of research. I mean, the show is not at all based on Steve Cohen or anything like that. But you know, David, Andrew, and I did a ton of research about the world of, you know, when you think about this, people who run hedge funds, these are billionaires, and they're almost like nation states. Their power and influence is almost unchecked, and the only thing that checks it at all, potentially, is the federal government in the form of the SEC when it comes to fines and the United States Attorney's Office when it comes to potential jail time for felonious conduct. And so we thought, and U.S. attorneys have this incredible amount of unfettered power too, and so our notion was to set these forces in opposition to one another. And to do that well, you know, you have to kind of know what's going on in these worlds in real life, and you have to kind of anticipate where it could go. So it's never surprising if the SEC or the U.S. Attorney's Office gets into a problem with one of these hedge funds people, and the more that stuff's in the news, the better it is for our show, for sure.
Now, how much did you and David know about the intricacies and the lingo of that world, or did you have to turn to Andrew and say, what would they say here?
Well, you know, it's a combination of things. Whenever we get into a world and we're interested in it, we do a tremendous amount of research. Now, sometimes that means spending years late at night playing poker, like for Rounders. Sometimes that means having to suffer through sitting with $2,000 an hour escorts, so they'll tell you how they spend their nights when you're writing The Girlfriend Experience. And here, Andrew was an incredible conduit to the world, so that through his contact base, we were able to hang out with the super giant whales of these worlds. So we were able to sit with billionaire hedge fund managers, go to their morning meetings, ask them questions, and in doing all that work, you pick up the lingo. You know, it's not really like you go, oh, I wish I had some lingo here. It's kind of like if you spend enough time immersing yourself in the world, when you start writing the characters, that's how they express themselves because you've sort of done enough of the work ahead of time, if that makes sense.
Yeah, we've had a couple of movies in the last couple of years about Wall Street big shots, and intrigue on Wall Street. The Big Short is out now, and it's a big hit and a terrific movie. A couple of years ago, Scorsese and DiCaprio had The Wolf of Wall Street. Were you influenced by any of that?
Well, you know, you watch all the stuff that's out there in the culture. Of course, The Big Short, I mean, that came, we'd already shot a whole season by the time we saw the movie The Big Short.
Yeah.
We'd both read that book. I mean, Margin Call is an incredible little movie about that world with Jeremy Irons and Zach Quinto. And we loved that film and thought it was a great film about really the crash. And so we were really interested in what happened after the crash. We both were influenced by, Dave and I, as screenwriters, by the first Wall Street movie. Oliver Stone is a pretty big, in terms of the way he would find the insular language of a world and then put that on screen, and he did it so incredibly well in Platoon and Wall Street and in Scarface before that as a writer. De Palma directed it, but he wrote it. We are, we definitely model some of that, or the way a Spike Lee or David Mamet would get inside the world, the language of a world, and then put it up on screen.
You have two great leads here in Damian Lewis, who people might know from Showtime's Homeland, and Paul Giamatti, who has been in pretty much every other movie ever made. And as I mentioned to a friend of mine earlier today, I would watch this guy read a menu. He's such a good actor. How do you get a Paul Giamatti and a Damian Lewis to do your show?
Yeah, I mean, we just feel incredibly fortunate about that. I mean, we really do. I'm an enormous New York Knicks fan, so it's probably the way that Phil Jackson felt when he knew what Porzingis was before anybody else. We felt like... we know Paul. We produced a film called The Illusionist that Paul is one of the stars of. It's Paul and Edward Norton. So we knew Paul, and when we heard he was available during the time slot we were going to shoot the pilot, we immediately emailed him, called him, sent him the script. When he said he liked the script, we got on an airplane, flew out. We were having dinner with him that night because, you get somebody like that to be interested, you have to get in there and close the deal, much like one of our characters might. And by the end of that night, he'd pretty much, agreed to do it if a deal could be struck, and then Showtime were able to strike a deal with him. And then Showtime had this great relationship with Damian because of Homeland. And so they reached out to him, sent him the script, he liked it, and then we began a Skype correspondence because he was in England. And we would talk to him on Skype like every other day for a few weeks. Then he came here and also committed. And we had those two guys, we knew that we had a show.
When you tell Paul Giamatti, by the way, there are going to be scenes of you bound and tied by a dominatrix with a ball gag in your mouth, does he say, I'm in, or does he say, what?
No, that was in the script we sent him. So we sent him an email and called him, and then before we flew to meet him, we sent him the script. And we absolutely looked at each other like, well, this is going to tell us a whole lot about whether an actor... But he had no issue with it. He was totally... Look, that guy, if you look at his work, I mean, he's an actor who... One of the great differences between someone who's just sort of like a star and a real actor who also happens to be a star is the actor has no vanity. And so Paul is not looking to protect himself. He is looking to capture this character and portray this character in a true, interesting, exciting, engaging way. And he wasn't like, oh, how's this going to reflect on Paul Giamatti? He was much more like, tell me all the reasons that the character Chuck Rose is like this, and here's what I think, and here's some research I'm doing. And it all informs why he's so great in all these roles, and particularly why he's so great in this role.
Which kind of leads me to my next question. Once we talk about the dominatrix, there's also some nudity in this. After all, it is cable TV. How hard is it in the year 2015 or now in the year 2016 to convince actors and actresses to do nudity?
It's so interesting. There's definitely some nudity in the show.
Yep.
And it's a world that, I mean, if you're portraying these worlds, it would be hard to do it without some sexual content. I mean, that's part of what money, power, access, it gets you, right? And so... And these people, some of them trade on this stuff, but when you send actors the script, and I think when they see the people who are involved, meaning these actors that they're going to get to work with, I think they don't come in to talk about it unless they're prepared to do it. I mean, to some extent, we're all of us who do the thing that I do, we're all like circus people. You know what I mean? It's not really like State and Maine where an actress is going to hold you up about it. If they think it makes sense for the character, they're going to come in and do it.
Mm-hmm. And how is it different for you as a person who has done mostly movies to now work in the TV form?
Yeah, I love television. I mean, Mad Men, to me, is as good as any movie ever made, pretty much. You know, and it's hard to make character study movies now. It's much more challenging to get those movies made. But on television here, we had the opportunity to take 12 episodes, and hopefully it'll be 24 and then 36 episodes, to tell this kind of story, like, in a novelistic way. And it lets you really care about these characters, we hope, and really go on a journey with them and really understand their situation and the battle, the battles in which they're engaged, in a way that sometimes it's hard to build a movie to do that.
What does that do to the writing challenge, though? I mean, if you're used to having the discipline of saying, okay, you know what, we got to make this 90, 100, 120 minutes. Now you're thinking, well, now we've got 12 hours to fill here. Does that mean a different way of thinking when it comes to sitting down and writing that script?
Yeah, I guess it in some way it could. We viewed it more like we were going to get to make 12 hour-long movies, you know? So yes, it's daunting at the beginning. But we really felt like we understood these characters, and we really felt like we understood why they were set in opposition to one another, and then we're able to people the world with these women as well, Malin Ackerman and Maggie Siff, and I don't know, somehow it that part of it seemed like an opportunity, you know, not like something to be scared of. It seemed like something to really run towards.
It's a terrific cast, and everybody does a terrific job in it. Talking with Brian Koppelman, who's one of the showrunners on Billions, which makes its debut this Sunday night on Showtime. There's a scene, I don't know if it's in the second or third episode, where Paul Giamatti, is as the U.S. attorney, is talking to somebody in his office who wants to go and make this move right now. And Paul Giamatti gives a speech about the riderless horse. And the guy doesn't know what he's talking about. And he then explains a scene from Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. Now, I don't want to spoil that scene because it's so well written and so well acted. People need to see it. But I'm curious if you've always had in the back of your mind that part of Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid and been waiting to put it in the script.
That's I love that question. I mean, look, Dave and I have had allusions to that kind of thing since Rounders. And, yeah, I mean, we definitely have that in our back pocket, for sure. We walk around saying, who are those guys? I mean, you know, we're guys in our late 40s who grew up watching those movies. And William Goldman's Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid script is one of the all-time greats. And that moment on the rocks has always been with us. And that's one of the great things about a TV series, is you have things that you've carried around a long time that you can deploy to great effect. I'm so glad that you liked that moment. That moment means a ton to us. And yes, Paul, I would say Giamatti, really relished saying that stuff, because he's our age too, and he also was a little boy watching that movie 25 times.
You know, it reminded me a little bit of Albert Brooks, who must have an obsession with Easy Rider, because he referenced it in all of his first four movies, and in fact put it into his movie Lost in America, you know, even with the Steppenwolf Born to Be Wild soundtrack.
Yes.
So that was obviously something that stuck with him after having seen that movie. And I thought when I saw this scene with Giamatti doing that, I bet Brian and David have had that in their minds for a long time.
No, you're exactly right. Exactly right.
Now, you also do a podcast called The Moment, which I subscribe to and I enjoy. And on your most recent episode, you had Ryan Fleck and Anna Boden on. They are the directors of Mississippi Grind, a movie I appear in, by the way.
Oh, you do? And where are you in the film?
I'm the guy who tries to bluff Ben Mendelsohn off of his spade flush and move all in against him. And I don't have a line in there because, you know, you got to pay me if I talk.
Right.
So I'm just a featured extra in there. But I'm in that, and I actually helped them out with some ideas for the movie, and that's a long, long story. But you had them direct an episode, I think it's episode 5.
I love Ryan and Adam, and they are among first of all, I mean, I'm sure if you're in it, you've talked about it to your listeners a bunch, but boy, man, that's a movie people should, that's a great Sunday. Watch Mississippi Grind and then watch the first episode of Billions. I mean, that is a hell of a movie.
Yeah.
I love that film.
Yeah.
They're great. They're among the best directors working today.
And I know they've got to be extremely disappointed at the poor distribution for that movie, but that's another show for another day. But I'm curious, as a person who has overseen movies for several years, what it's like when you're doing a TV series and you don't have a singular director's vision to go along with your vision. Each week you're handing a script to a different set of directors or a single director and saying, okay, let's have your vision and have it meld with ours. How is that different for you? Again, part of the TV versus movie question, I guess.
Yeah, you have to be, you have to set yourself up, I think, so that you're not just kind of accepting some TV director who doesn't care or who has a vision that's disparate from yours. I mean, the directors we hired on this show are directors who we've either worked with before or are heroes or friends. So we got Neil LaBute, you know, director of In the Company of Men and writer, one of the like, sort of legendary New York directors. We have James Foley, who directed Glengarry Glen Ross, which is like a cornerstone movie for us. And he directed At Close Range and a bunch of House of Cards episodes, and he directed two. John Dahl, who directed our film Rounders, directed one of these. Karan Kassamba directed Girlfight. So we hired directors whose work we love. And then you also spend a lot of time with them in prep so that you're going through the script over and over again. You're going through the scenes with them. And so you're teasing out their best ideas. They're hearing your ideas. And the hope is that you see it, the thing the same way, and that they're additive, that they use the camera and staging to tell your story, but to tell it in a way that's elevated by their particular vision.
And I'm also guessing, because you and Dave and Andrew are the showrunners, it's not like in many movie situations where the writer's not even welcome on the set. In this case, you're there, and it can't stray very far from your vision because you're running the whole operation.
Well, that's right. I mean, David and I, Andrew was an exec producer and made the pilot with us, but Dave and I are the showrunners of the show, and Dave and I are, because Andrew has, you know, a lot of jobs, but in the real world. But David and I, as showrunners, of course, we're able to be on set, in the editing room, in prep. It's not, and we've been lucky in our feature film career as well, right from the beginning, to be invited to set on pretty much any movie we've written, and because we've directed and produced too. It's all collaborating, right? It's all getting people, and it's not that different from, if I can use a sports, I mean, it's not that different from Nick Saban getting all these people to work together to play as a team. I mean, my job, Dave's job in the show, running a show, is to get all these hundreds of people working on the thing to be pointing in the same direction and seeing the same show and working toward making the same show. So that if we're not on set, the assistant director knows the show that we're making. The cinematographer knows the show that we're making. Each person along the way knows what we're trying to do, and then they can help do it. And you're trying to enlist people in that way.
Well, everybody worked on something that really worked out very well, and I think a lot of people are going to watch this show and become fans of it very, very quickly. Before I let you go, though, since I was in a poker movie, and because I'm a poker player, and because Rounders is a seminal poker movie, I've got to ask you the question you're by now very, very sick of. What's the story with Rounders 2?
I will tell you that we were talking to Matt Damon about it yesterday. It's still alive. That's all I can say. Still alive.
Edward Norton?
Oh, yeah, we wouldn't do it without Edward. But we happened to be talking about it yesterday.
Now, what is this? What does still alive mean? Does that mean we're beginning to work on a script? It's something that might happen in the next couple of years?
All I can say is we all want it to happen.
And by the way, we have a project we're busy with right now, so stop asking me. I understand.
We all want it to happen. We really do.
All right. Brian Koppelman is one of the executive producers and showrunners of Billions, which debuts this Sunday night on Showtime, and it is definitely worth your while. A pleasure talking to you.
Thank you so much for your enthusiasm. This is great fun.
Thank you very much. I'm Paul Harris. This is the Big 550 KTRS.